Now is the chance to use reliable energy to grow your money with the Dominion Energy Reliability Investment. Our new investment product offers competitive returns, no maintenance fees, and flexible online access to your money. Make the reliable investment in reliable energy. The Dominion Energy Reliability Investment. To find out more, go online to reliabilityinvestment.com. That's reliabilityinvestment.com.
Today's episode of the Sacktown Royalty Show is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want.
It's the Sacktown Royalty Show. Here's your host, Greg Wissinger.
Welcome to the Sacktown Royalty Show. I'm your host, Greg Wissinger. Welcoming to the show a return guest, Sacktown Royalty's own, Omer Khan. We're going to recap the season. How are you doing, Omer?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Oh, can't complain. We've just wrapped up another season of Kings basketball, ending in utter disappointment. But now we've got a whole off season full of hopes and dreams to be crushed yet again. So it's the good time of year for a Kings fan, right?
Well, it seems like lately the off season has been the best time of the year.
Yeah, I mean, we get to talk ourselves into why Marco Bellinelli is going to fix everything.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
I guess the off season is as good a place to start recapping the last year as any. So, I mean, if we go back a year ago, George Karl had been brought in. He'd played, you know, coached 30 games. And we're entering the summer. There's some free agent signings. There's drafting Willie Cauley-Stein. And before the season even really kicked off, though, Carl was talking about how no one was untradeable, and Boogie was implied to be on that list.
Yeah. That kind of got the season off to a pretty rough start. You know, Boogie, everybody knows he's all about loyalty, and he's all about the family, and although it may not seem that way sometimes with the way he acts on the court, I think his teammates genuinely do love him. And I think he loves his teammates too.
Yeah, and I agree. It was one of those points that kind of set things in motion for what was going to come. But there was still plenty of optimism, right? Because, I mean, the Kings added Kosta Koufos. The Kings added Marco Bellinelli. They brought back Quincy Acey. They re-signed Omri Caspi. You know, they brought in Rajon Rondo, which was a controversial but a pretty significant signing. And of course,
oh yeah, for
and
sure.
Of course, there's the trade that is now kind of hanging over everything, where the Kings traded away Stauskas, Jason Thompson, Carl Landry, and got cap space, but also gave Philly those pick swap options. So, I mean, if we look back a year later, what are your thoughts on that at this point?
Well, I think that it was a good gamble. I know that people have said that, you know, there's other ways to clear cap space, like using the stretch provision. But honestly, I think that the stretch provision option is a little bit overrated, because then you're stuck dealing with absolutely dead cap space for a really long time. And so the trade with Philly was a good way to just clear everything off the books. And because of that trade, I think the Kings' cap situation does actually not look that bad. I mean, they have almost no bad contracts on the roster. Well, I guess Bellinelli might count as a bad contract now, since he underperformed so much during the year. But you know, you look up and down the roster and you see, like, you know, Kosta Koufos, who signed at a reasonable contract, Darren Collison, who signed at a reasonable contract, Rudy Gay, even he is signed at a reasonable contract. And so you look at the pieces that they have on the roster, and you see that, like, there's a lot of opportunity to move around, you know, whether it's via trades, and with the cap exploding this summer, you know, they can go into the free agency market and see, you know, see if any fishes will bite. Although the Kings' reputation as a franchise probably hasn't been worse. But I think that the cap situation in general, just from a bird's eye view, it's not that bad right now. And I think that a large part of that is because of the Philly trade, because then, you know, if without it, you'd still be paying all that money to Jason Thompson, Carl Landry, and Nick Stauskas, who honestly, the mistake was drafting him in the first place, not necessarily dumping him, especially since he struggled so much as a shooter while that was supposed to be his calling card. So, I mean, you can't judge the Philly trade until we find out exactly what the Kings have conveyed. And there's still, you know, that chance that Philly might get the pick swap this year, or there's still the chance that the Kings will give up a really valuable pick in 2018 or 2019. So I think that's when we can truly judge how the Philly trade worked out. But I'm perfectly okay with it, because what it essentially is, it's betting on yourself. You're betting on your own front office. You're betting on your players. You're betting on your coaching staff to be able to put together a winner. And I'm okay with mistakes of aggression. And getting the Kings out of their decade-long funk, it was going to take some risks. And so while the results aren't there in the first year, I'm still at a point where I can look back and say that, okay, it didn't work out in year one, and but the situation that they're in right now, they can still turn it around relatively quickly if they need to.
Yeah, I mean, Jason Thompson, I think, would have been coming off the books this summer either way, but Carl Landry, I think, has another year or two after this that he'd be on the books, and that was the really big dead money that doesn't get talked about too much.
I think both JT and Carl Landry were coming off next season. So in 2017, if I'm not mistaken, though, I think that
JT only had like less than $1 million guaranteed for the upcoming year, so he could have easily been waived for cheap. Yeah.
Oh, but gotcha. Okay.
But then also, he would have added to the logjam or the issue of mediocrity at shooting guard, and he hasn't done much with the opportunity in Philly, which everyone kind of expects, like, oh, he's going to get playing time, he's going to be able to shoot, and he'll be better. And yeah, that hasn't happened. So that aspect of the trade does not look bad at all, even though it did contribute to the, oh, Kings are trading away another first-round mistake, or making a mistake by trading the first round. Or, I mean, you could pick which one you liked, because they were both being said regularly.
The thing about Stauskas is that, like, the mistake was really drafting him. The mistake wasn't getting rid of him before his value tanked. The mistake was picking him in the first place and realizing, well, this guy might not be an NBA player.
Yeah, I mean, pick swaps or not, do you think Philly does that with him as the sweetener if they know what he would be like at this point, you know, a year later? It's tough to say, obviously, because they were working on their own agenda, but
yeah,
he's definitely not as valuable a trade chip as he was at last summer.
Definitely not. Yeah.
So then we move to what is the unmistakably solid move that the Kings did make last offseason, which, going back to the draft, it was taking Willie Cauley-Stein. Now, obviously, he had struggles throughout the year with getting consistent playing time. A lot of that was Carl's known reluctance to play rookies any significant portions, but when we did see him and when he did get to play, especially at the tail end of the season, I think we can agree that Willie Cauley-Stein was an excellent pick.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think Willie really fit what the Kings were looking for last offseason as a rookie who can come in and contribute right away. You know, he has obviously the athleticism, he has the length, he has the a host of offensive skills that nobody really gave him credit for, whether it's the hooks or the nicer jumper than people expected. And even towards the end of the season, you started noticing him getting the ball and making some really nice passes. And I think that bodes really well for his potential as an offensive piece. because it shows that he has a much higher understanding of the game than you'd expect. Because, I mean, you give DeAndre Jordan or Tyson Chandler the ball up there in the high post, and I've never seen them make a pass like Willie did when I think it was against the Suns, where like he found a cutting Ben McLemore for a dunk. And that's the kind of thing that that I think the scouts really missed out on. And I understand that he's 22 and he's closer to the final product of what he's going to contribute as an NBA player. But I think that basketball IQ and combination of, you know, defensive talent, that could really make him a special pick.
See, I'm not sure I buy into the whole guys who were drafted at 22 have less potential for continued growth. I mean, look no further than Steph Curry and CJ McCollum and what they've both did this season. I mean, they had that same knock coming out of college as well, that they were older guys who, you know, wouldn't be able to grow as much. And I mean, Steph's obviously a one-off case. That's not something you can point to and say, well, see, other players are going to do that. But I mean, CJ McCollum was a guy who had that knock. He was an older player, went to a smaller school, all the traditional knocks. And he had a really nice season for the Blazers and should probably be in pretty high contention for most approved this year. And, you know, some of his emergence was delayed due to injury, but nonetheless, I mean, he's definitely more than what people necessarily thought he'd be in his rookie year. It's not like he came out a finished product.
Yeah, you know, that's actually a really good point. And, you know, you never really truly know, like, how much a player is going to improve until they actually hit the ground running, and you start seeing them day in and day out and like throughout the seasons, and see what kind of skills they're adding and like what they're polishing up. So I think that's a really good point, that you know, senior or juniors and seniors and upperclassmen from the NCAA, I feel like they could be underrated as a source of you know, really good potential players who actually might keep improving further on into their NBA careers, because the game's changed so much, you know, over the years. And there's so much more of an emphasis on ball movement and player movement and, you know, running scripted sets in offense. And, you know, there's an argument to be made that, like, more years of college actually help develop a player into someone who can I guess what I'm trying to say is that the four years of college in a structured offense, that helps a player gain a better understanding of the game. Whereas, you know, a rookie sitting on the bench or down in the D League might not get that same opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. So Willie comes in. Takes a while for us to truly see it, but, I mean, there's glimpses early on. But then, you know, as we look at the start of the season, one of the first things that really jumps out is DeMarcus Cousins is taking threes. And that was a big early season storyline. You know, there was a lot of debate about, you know, should he be taking threes? Should he be down low? You know, and that was debated for months into the season. There was the whole discussion of scheme and effort that came kind of later as an offshoot of that, but initially there was a lot of discussion about should DeMarcus Cousins be shooting threes. What are your thoughts looking back with some hindsight, knowing what we know as far as how he finished the season?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that you know, George Karl can hang his hat on, honestly. I think the introduction of the three-pointer to DeMarcus's game has been really successful. You know, this year he shot around 33% from three, and that's about 50% from, that's the same thing as 50% from two-point range. And, you know, that's a really good, that's a very solid, productive season from three-point range in your first year shooting threes. And if you look back at some of the different stretch bigs around the league, like, you know, Al Horford and Paul Millsap, who developed a three-point shot later on in their careers, I think it's a good starting point. So the only thing is that what is three-point shot replacing? So as long as DeMarcus is taking three-pointers instead of those mid-jumpers, especially those mid-range jumpers off the dribble, because those are even less efficient than the regular spot-up mid-range jumper. And he's replacing those with threes, and he's not just hanging around the perimeter for the entirety of an offensive possession, or like, as long as he's still maintaining like how much he's impacting the game from post or from attacking the basket, I think that the three-point shot is a very welcome addition to his game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just taking a quick look here, and I mean, outside of obviously Caspi had a great year shooting from three. I'm just looking at other guys who shot better than Cousins from three. Oh wow, Kings as a whole actually shot better from three than I expected this year.
Yeah, they did. They had a few guys who had some pretty productive seasons from the 3-point range.
I mean, Cousins.
Although unfortunately, the designated shooter Bellinelli wasn't one of them, but.
Yeah, Bellinelli finished shooting 30.6% from three, but I mean, Cousins shot 33% from three, and he was ninth on the team. I don't remember the last time the Kings had more than two guys above 33%, so that's a step in the right direction, I guess.
Right, especially as the league moves toward more and more three-pointers attempted.
Interesting. I don't think I would have noticed that stat otherwise if it wasn't for this discussion.
Well, aren't you glad you hired me?
Exactly. It's all finally paying off. So then that question of should DeMarcus be shooting threes, and I think you're absolutely right. It does come down to what shots he's replacing, and he took fewer as the season progressed as well. But, you know, as we progressed into the season, we got more of that whole argument of scheme versus effort. The idea that Carl brought up endlessly, that, you know, it was a lack of effort, it wasn't the problems with the scheme, and you had a great breakdown in the season showing exactly why it wasn't the effort, it was the scheme, or at least that the scheme was flawed. I think a lot of us kind of settled out that it's a combination of the two, but the bigger issue is just you can't say that there was nothing wrong with the scheme. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. You know, it's hard to judge the players. I had a hard time, you know, discerning whether the players were or were not actually giving effort or not, because, you know, I didn't fully understand what the defensive scheme was all about. Like, it was that radically different from what the base NBA defense that's common around the league, that, you know, Tom Thibodeau, who introduced it when he was a part of the Bulls, that everybody else is copying. And then George Karl comes in with this really wonky scheme. And it was really hard to break down, like, kind of pinpoint exactly, you know, like where each player is supposed to be. So I thought it was really hard to judge the effort because the scheme was so different, you know? And, you know, the results just weren't there. The Kings were one of the worst defensive teams in the NBA. And I felt like the team was really underperforming defensively because if they had picked up that traditional scheme in the first place, rather than, you know, they actually did end up going to a lot of what Tom Thibodeau actually teaches in March when they did the actual consult with Bibbs. So once that scheme change happened, then you started seeing, like, okay, now they're trying to, you know, force ball handlers to the baseline. Now they're rotating before the pass comes. And so once that started happening, then you could kind of see that, like, okay, you know, this is where the effort needs to improve. So I think that saying that it was a combination of both is completely fair. But the fact that, you know, the defense was just so flawed from the very beginning, that's something that was honestly really shocking to me, because, you know, I had come into the season just expecting that Carl would maybe, you know, maybe not be a defensive genius, but, you know, at least played, at least, you know, instituted the same kind of defenses that 29 other teams in the NBA are using.
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, I was definitely, at least initially, very much in the knee-jerk reaction of, you know, the effort's not the issue, it is the scheme. You can't judge the effort because of all the issues with the scheme. But, you know, as time went on, there were games where, even when the scheme was messed up, you could see, you know, it was a game for whatever reason Rondo would decide to play defense, or, you know, just different guys that clearly at different points were completely checked out on, especially the defensive end, and I think Rondo was among the worst. Cousins, by all means, I mean, I'm known around the site as more of a Cousins defender, but I'm not going to deny that there's plenty of plays he takes off on defense or doesn't give maximum effort. And I think that there's reasonable excuses for that, that, you know, he is conserving effort for the offensive end, and I mean, something we see with a lot of stars, but no doubt he didn't give it maximum effort on defense on every play. And, you know, there's plenty of examples that you can point to where guys were either not actively rotating or not giving effort. I mean, Bellinelli was a big issue in that department as well before he, you know, ended up being questionable for the last third of the season with an ankle roll or something. But, so, I mean, there was that whole storyline. I mean, it was a whole mess. But, I mean, as we progress through the season, Kings are kind of limping along, and they kind of collapse their way into the All-Star break. Cousins is going to the All-Star game, which was great, exciting for the Kings fans that, you know, he was selected to the team. It wasn't an injury replacement. He's kind of cemented himself now. He's probably going to be a staple of All-Star games for a long time to come. But All-Star Weekend was overshadowed by the idea that the Kings were going to fire George Karl and then just decided not to. Like,
oh my God, that was such a mess. And, you know, we still don't know 100% what actually happened behind the scenes that made the change, that made the team, you know, change course so quickly. And I think that's probably the most nerve-wracking thing that happened this season for me personally. Knowing that, you know, there's still this element of dysfunction behind the scenes in, like, the ownership and the front office. And, you know, Mark Stein, he tweeted just, I think it was this morning, it was basically saying that, you know, firing Carl was Vlade's call back in February, but it was blocked by the minority owners. And that completely contradictory to me, because if it was blocked by the minority owners, then it wasn't Vlade's call. It was just a suggestion that he made. And if it was Vlade's call, then it wasn't blocked by the minority owners. It was just something that they might have, you know, pressured both Vivek and Vlade to change course, but ultimately it was still Vlade's call. So we still don't know who's calling the shots behind the scenes, and it's really nerve-wracking knowing that, you know, this dynamic still exists between the ownership and the front office where, you know, they decide on making a move, but there's different factions that, you know, they stick their hands in the gears and they stop the machine completely. And with probably the most important coaching search of DeMarcus Cousins era in Sacramento coming up this summer, that's something that really, really makes me nervous. I don't know about you, but...
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack from what you just said there. I mean, I think the first is that clearly Mark Stein is pretty dialed in with the office. I mean, it seems like, you know, he probably has a pretty good relation with Vlade to the point where, I mean, he's getting direct information, and what he reports is kind of what Vlade and or the Kings are kind of wanting you to know. That seems pretty clear. I have no inside knowledge of that. That's just, it seems pretty obvious to me. But
Right, right.
What's interesting about that is right around the All-Star break, Adrian Wojnarowski on his podcast had three assistant GMs. It was from the Rockets, the Warriors, and some other team I can't really remember. Maybe Celtics? I could be wrong. But they talked about the idea that, you know, every GM has to run their decisions by an owner. And some, the owner just trusts them implicitly, and it's kind of a rubber stamp thing that, yeah, you're running it the way you want to see things. But some teams have more convoluted ownership structures, and so there's a lot of different people that have to approve what's about to happen. So I don't think it's necessarily unique to the Kings that Vlade made a decision and it got shot down by owners. The problem is how publicly it all happened. You know, the fact that they have so many leaks going on, the fact that so much gets filtered out through the media first, and it's been that way for a while now. But, I mean, it seems like Vivek is content to let Vlade make the call, but where the issue came in was that in order to fire Carl, there basically had to be a cash call to the minority owners, which is, you know, what we've kind of heard over the past couple of months, that basically Vivek had to do a cash call to the other owners to pony up their share of, you know, paying off the rest of George Karl's contract, and they balked at it, saying, hey, this is the third coach we're going to have paid to walk away on a multi-year contract. Like, what are we doing here? We don't want to pay it. You can fire him if you want, but Vivek, it's your dime. And, or at least that's kind of the vibe I've gotten. Again, I'm not saying that based on anything insider. I'm not that close to things, but, and if that's it makes sense, but it's still an issue. And all those assistant GMs talking to Woj, they talked about how there's certain teams you kind of avoid doing deals with because you know they've got a messed up ownership structure. And it felt like they were just talking about the Kings, but it easily could have been, you know, before the recent ownership change, the Atlanta Hawks were famously that way. They had a huge ownership group, and it was difficult to get anything approved, and there was all this infighting and dysfunction, and that's why Atlanta was terrible for so long.
Right, right. And I think that's a perfectly fair explanation of what happened. And, you know, honestly, for me, that would be the best case scenario. But, you know, as outsiders, we don't really know. We have to rely on these sourced reports that come out, and they just seem to get weirder and weirder every day.
And what's funny is that's the best case scenario, and it's still like, oh, God, this team is so dysfunctional. Like,
absolutely.
Like, the best case is full-on dysfunction.
Yeah, because at the very least, you know, there's an opportunity for Vlade to do what he thought was necessary.
Yeah.
And if he thought that, like, okay, maybe I should step back and maybe we should wait on firing Carl, that's okay to me. Like, that's a call that general manager made. And it was made by, you know, basketball brain trust. It was a decision made with basketball in mind, not based off of, you know, cash or resources. And, you know, it's healthy. It's not dysfunctional. But I think you're absolutely right that, like, the way it got public is absolutely, it's not encouraging. And it's a sign that there's still a lot that the front office has to learn in terms of, you know, plugging these leaks and trying to run a tight ship the way Jeff Petrie used to run and the way the Spurs now run. And I'm just hoping that, you know, that is like the way you explained it. I'm just hoping that's actually like what happened, because that's a sign that, like, you know, at least Vlade's in charge.
How funny is it that we're now pining for the silence and ambiguity of the Jeff Petrie era, when at the start of the Pete D'Alessandro era, we're like, look at all this wonderful transparency.
Yeah. Jeff Petrie was just over there in his cabin in the woods, and he was making deals while going on nature hikes.
So then we get to kind of playing out the string, and guys start missing games due to quote-unquote injuries or things that take longer than expected to recover, like you know, Ben McAdoo misses like 30 games with a like finger dislocation or something. Like,
yeah, seriously.
I mean, injuries linger, guys are sitting out, like it's pretty clear what's going on as the Kings are kind of almost fully out of playoff picture at this point. And then kind of the last big chapter, if I think back on the season, it was kind of the open mutiny against Carl, specifically around the support or Carl's lack thereof of Willie Cauley-Stein and Seth Curry.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that just kind of that really turned the roster against Carl, in the sense that you know, there was already questions of whether he, you know, what his opinion of the roster was, you know, and his coaching style was already sort of moved, that he did most of his coaching to his assistants, and then hearing like all this stuff in the media that. Honestly, like when you look at the entire quotes in context, they aren't that bad, but you can easily see how they were misconstrued. And it was just an entirely poor choice of words by Carl. And it seemed to confirm to many different players on the roster what they had already suspected, that, you know, Carl was going to continue to just take shots at them from the media. And he was basically already retired, and like he didn't really care about like what was going on around him, and he didn't put in his 1% to turn the season around the way the roster anyway thought that he should have.
Yeah, it was funny. I mean, he got officially fired today. We're recording this on Thursday, and
you know what that means, right? That means that you can him to be rehired tomorrow.
Perfect. Yeah.
And
yeah.
All of this is moot.
But he did, you know, he released his outgoing statement, which was a statement that was handled, I thought, very classy. But our colleague Tony Sipteris pointed out, he's like, I think that's the nicest things that Carl has said about Sacramento since becoming a coach. Like, just or at least about the roster. Like, just.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Carl has a history well before Sacramento of attempting to motivate players by criticizing them in the media, and at a certain point, it wasn't working, and you know that was kind of the final chapter. Now, those are the highlights that stand out to me. I haven't even touched on like half a dozen DeMarcus Cousins controversies that happened this season. I haven't touched on the attempted to acquire Pau Gasol for no apparent reason. Like, there's so many other things that we've glossed over. Like, I mean, this season's been such a whirlwind of craziness that, I mean, what's the major story we haven't touched on yet that you want to talk about?
Oh man. There's just been so many different things that happened this season through all the drama and the infighting and, you know, like, oh, he's not getting along with him, and like it was basically NBA TMZ here in Sacramento. And it's hard to keep track of everything that happened, so like my mind is just completely numb to what happened this entire season.
So let's get to my new favorite story then. George Karl is officially fired, and we knew that when he was fired, his camp would start to filter out some anti-Sacramento stories. Or anti-Sacramento Kings stories. You know, not necessarily the city, but the organization, the coaching, the roster. We're going to hear a lot over the next week or two. The first thing we hear today is in a report from Chris Mannix that apparently the coaches were not allowed to eat at the breakfast at was the practice facility where the players can eat. And it's because apparently the organization's broke? Like,
I don't even know about that one. That one just, it's so bizarre. It's so weird. Like, I just can't even wrap my head around it. And you kind of expected this, that, like, you know, Carl's statement was about as classy as it could get. But there is the mudslinging that's going to go on behind the scenes, too. So, like, It's funny because, you know, in public, both Vlade and the ownership and the front office and Carl, they're all like showing the utmost respect to each other and they're putting out the classy statements. But I'm getting ready for a full-on like food fight through the media. And this whole Lunchgate thing, that I feel like this is the opening salvo. There's going to be more strange stories to come.
But you almost have to expect that, because if not, like, if this is the ammunition they've saved,
oh my goodness.
The Kings should be so lucky. But here's the thing that I mean, there's going to be a lot that comes out, and the tricky part's going to be figuring out what's true and what's not, because for all I know, yeah, maybe they banned him from breakfast. Best case scenario, maybe it's just because they were like, eh, we're going to give the players a reprieve from having to be around the coach they hate. You know, that's kind of your best case scenario. Maybe they were actually that cheap. I have no idea. But that seems kind of odd considering they're building a new arena and all these other things that they're doing. But
Right, exactly.
But
yeah,
the thing you got to keep in mind, though, is
I don't know.
George Karl's agent is Warren LeGarry. Warren LeGarry is like the power player in the world of coaches' agents. He worked directly with Arm Tellem. Arm Tellem was the player side of the house. He was the coach's side. Like, very powerful agent in the coaching world. He's a guy who's going to have a lot of information and media outlets, particularly those that rely on a lot of unnamed sources, are going to be quick to kind of carry water for, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. And I personally think my attitude towards whatever is going to come out is just step back, don't worry about the stories, and just focus on, you know, whatever facts that you can find. Because it's the facts that are important. And when I say facts, I mean like, you know, what's actually happening right now. And, you know, like, say, for example, you know, a coach is coming in for an interview, or, you know, the front office decides to, you know, hire a new front office executive. I think those are the more important stories. And all this, like, juicy gossip about what happened during the year, I feel like I'm just going to tune it out.
But then how will we get the clicks to feed our families?
That's true. That's very true. And, you know, we all live off of clicks, you know. And we might have to diet a bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of entertainment for the Kings this summer with all the stories, or at least over the next couple of weeks. But to your point, I think it is going to be important to know that, like, at least half of it all is going to be fluff, and there's going to be some truth to it. I'm not going to sit here and pretend the Kings are a perfect organization, or, you know, that stories of incompetence are completely unfounded.
right.
There's also going to be an agenda and some embellishment that goes along with it, so it's going to be difficult to separate, you know, the truth from the juicy bits that just make it a little more fun.
Yeah, exactly. And ultimately, it doesn't really matter that much. Like, okay, so Carl didn't get to eat with the players that one day. I mean, how does that affect the organization all?
Well, if you're trying to lure a coach and they think they're going to have to go to McDonald's for breakfast instead of you know, having the breakfast provided, maybe that's a negotiating tactic.
True,
our next
true.
Coach is going to be like, I must have access to the breakfast buffet. Like...
Yeah, exactly. You know, honestly, I didn't even know that they had a cafeteria in the practice facility. So the idea of, like, the players eating in the gym is something I can't really picture.
Like, see, I just picture, like, a high school cafeteria, and I'm thinking of, like, who's at the cool table and who's at, like, the nerd table.
Yeah, exactly. And then who's getting booted out and sent to detention.
Yeah. Like... Cousins, Rondo, and Rudy are just kind of sitting around, and they might invite, like, Caspi over, but, like, Collison has to sit at the other table, or like.
Right. And then, you know, Willie's the cool freshman who just came in, and this analogy is going too far.
And Carl, sorry, and Carl's like, Carl's like the principal that's like, hey guys, I'm one of you. I'll sit and have lunch with you.
Yeah, how are you doing, young folk?
What's up, fellow kids?
Yeah, that's the meme I was thinking of.
All right, so enough dwelling on the past. Let's wrap this up thinking about the future. So obviously the Kings, I mean, we're going to see what happens with their draft pick, because there's going to be a coin flip between the Kings, the Nuggets, and the Bucks to determine the lottery order, not the final order, but who gets which ping pong balls, essentially. And
right.
Then from there, hopefully the Kings still have a draft pick. They can hopefully, you know, do something well with it. They'll probably need to do some free agent moves, some roster moves, some trades. But the big item, first and foremost, is the coaching search. So, real quick to wrap us up, who are your top preferred candidates to fill the head coaching role?
Well, for me personally, I think the Kings could go in a number of different directions and still be successful. There's a pretty good, a pretty good market for coaches out there right now. You know, you have your up and coming assistants like Atkinson in Atlanta. And, I think, I'm not sure how you say it, Larrañaga. I think that's how you say it.
Sure.
And I'm sorry for botching that. but he's the Boston assistant. And, I think if I was searching for a coach, what I would look for is, you know, is the coach going to come in and, is he going to bring like some semblance of offensive structure with him? Because that was one of the things that I think Jason Jones reported it the other day, that the players really wanted more direction on offense. And I thought that that was probably one of the things that, like, you know, I've been griping about all year long from an X's and O's perspective, that, you know, Carl, his philosophy is, you know, give total freedom to the players. But what that means practically is that the most assertive players are just going to do whatever, you know, they want. So what that means is that you'll see Rondo pounding the ball, hunting for assists. You'll see DeMarcus taking the ball from the elbow and isolating with no movement and no player movement, no ball movement, no misdirection. And the same goes with Rudy Gay. And, you know, their isolation numbers kind of speak for themselves. These are all stats that you can find on NBA.com. They track play types, and they rank them across the league. And DeMarcus and Rudy both, they rank as some of the worst isolation players in the entire league. And the fact that isolations made up such a big part of their offense was one of the factors, I think, that caused the Kings' offense to really underachieve. So when I go looking for a coaching candidate, I'm going to ask him, hey, like, what is your philosophy on offense? And, like, where do you see DeMarcus and Rudy and Rondo, if that's, you know, what you have in mind, where do you see them operating? You know, like, what kind of plays do you want to run? And how much direction and discipline are you going to give to this team? Because this team has proven that, you know, as one of the worst turnover teams in the NBA, they've proven that what they need is a set structure where, you know, roles are clearly defined for them. And, you know, they can just operate according to that structure, and they can just react, move from option to option instead of just freelancing all of the time. And, you know, you can go in a lot of different directions. There's a lot of different ways that you can create offensive structure, like whether it's, you know, a Spurs style offense, or whether it's, you know, what Boston is doing, or, you know, whether it's a triangle offense and what Tom Thibodeau likes to emphasize. So I feel like there's a lot of different directions the Kings can go. But just as long as that offensive structure is there and the coach is emphasizing discipline, and then I feel like the Kings can be successful and under many different coaches, actually. So that I haven't really given you a name that I prefer, but you know, I'm entirely open to what the next coach is going to sell, just as long as, you know, they stay disciplined and they run a structured offense.
Well, that's not as controversial as I was hoping, but fine. A thorough, measured response, I suppose, will do. But well, and I'm sure there'll be plenty more debate to come as different candidates become more real. Because right now, there's about 20 different names that could potentially be linked to the Kings. And, yeah, I think with a few exceptions, like Mark Jackson, few exceptions... I think almost anyone would be a pretty decent choice for him to move forward with. I think what's nice is hopefully Vlade's in place for the long haul. He just got his extension, and so he can pick a coach that fits what he wants to do, and they can move from there.
Yeah, exactly. And just a quick note on Mark Jackson. God, can you imagine going from George Karl, where all the gripes was that, you know, there's all this drama behind the scenes, and then you hire Mark Jackson, who burned every bridge in Golden State before he was finally shown the door.
I legitimately might stop following the Kings if they hire Mark Jackson. I would have to, like, take a week, like, go on a camping trip and, like, really, you know, find myself, like, to decide whether or not I'm going to go forward with that team, so.
Oh, my God. Talk about shooting yourself in the foot.
So, we've just settled it. The Kings will be hiring Mark Jackson. Tune in next week for the Sacktown
Reality
Show. All right. All right.
Boy.
I think that's as good a note as any to wrap up on. Where can people find your work?
So my Twitter handle is at OConStr. The STR, of course, stands for Sacktown Royalty. I'm there, but you can also, of course, find my work on the Sacktown Royalty front page, since I have an employment contract that says that I have to.
Well, I wasn't going for that. I mean, I'm not Aki's, but
all right. Yeah, that's my wholehearted endorsement of SBR.
It sounded so sincere. I write there because I have to. All right.
I write there because they will find me if I don't.
I don't know. We let Beagler just hang out, and he doesn't ever write, so.
That guy has the best gig. He just kind of sits around and, like, watches, and whenever he wants to chime in, he does.
Yeah. But, yeah, he's been around long enough, he's earned it. And
that's true.
All right, so that's going to do it for this week's episode. As always, go to iTunes, subscribe, leave us a rating, leave us a comment, let us know how we're doing. Always appreciate your feedback. You can also find us on Stitcher and other podcast places, I believe, if you're not on the whole Apple thing. And, of course, you can go to sacktownroyalty.com. You can listen to the episodes there. You can download from there. So it's all there if you aren't on any of those services. While you're on Sacktown Royalty, also leave us comments. Let us know what we're doing, because if I'm being honest, I check those a little bit more often. And I really do appreciate all of your feedback. Until next time. Thanks for listening.
Get a free audiobook and 30-day trial by signing up at audibletrial.com/sacktownroyalty. That's audibletrial.com/sacktownroyalty. audibletrial.com/sacktownroyalty. It supports the show and supports our sponsor, audible.com.
I'm ready to make my credits count.
I'm ready to take classes from a university that will help me build on my experience to prepare me for the future.
A university that will make me feel supported, encouraged, and connected.
Click this ad or go to online.odu.edu today.
I'm ready to make my credits count.
I'm ready to take classes from a university that will help me build on my experience to prepare me for the future.
A university that will make me feel supported, encouraged, and connected.
Click this ad or go to online.odu.edu today.